ftit interessanti li juri id-batija u s-sagrafiċċi li għamlu l-ewwel Malti li jissettilgħu fit-tramuntana ta' Queensland fl-Awstralja huwa Queensland's Sugar King, The Zammit Legacy. Din hija l-istorja ta' Paul Zammit u l-familja tiegħu, irrakkuntata minn nepputija tiegħu Catherine Smith. Minkejja id-batija u x-xogħol ibes daw il-Maltin ma qatgħux album u għamlu suċċess. Tkellimt ma' Catherine Smith li tgħidilna aktar dwar dan il-ktieb u in-nanni tagħha.
So my grandfather was born in Burkhara, Malta in 1888 and he died in February 1959. And then I was born in 1961. So I never met my grandfather. For my grandmother, Pauline, I met her and she died when I was around 17. So I did have a small association with her, but nothing with my grandfather, my nannu.
What sort of stories did you hear from your mother and your cousins that sort of encouraged you to do more research and find more about their life in Australia?
There were a number of different and varying stories that circulated within our extended family, mainly along the lines of the music and the use of their talent to fundraise for a range of communities and organisations across North Queensland. And different aunts and uncles spoke of my grandfather's gold mines in the Batavia goldfields in far North Queensland, and also the sugar cane and the farm life, which played a major part of the memories of my mother and her and my aunts and uncles. So these were some of the stories that were circulating as I was a child growing up.
And we're going to talk about the sugar cane. So he was involved in gold mines as well.
Yes, he had five lease, general mining leases, they call them, GMLs, general mining leases, in the Batavia goldfields that was later renamed the Wenlock goldfields after World War II.
When did they arrive in Queensland? When did they arrive in Australia?
So Granddad Nannu arrived in 1912 and Grandma came out almost 18 months later in December 1913 by herself with a little baby in her arms.
It was the custom in those days that the husband comes to Australia first, sort of prepare the place, a home for the wife and the kids. Is that how it worked?
No, it didn't. Quite interestingly, Mark Caruana, the Sydney-based historian, Maltese historian, has written the foreword for my book, and he assures me that Grandma Pauline's independent decision to travel unaccompanied from Malta to Australia, a journey of some 2 months' duration, was most courageous and very uncharacteristic of a wife's role at that time.
And obviously it wasn't easy to settle in such an environment in North Queensland in those early years.
No, and it would have been a great shock to her coming from a little island in the Mediterranean Sea and then meeting up with my grandfather in North Queensland in the height of the North Queensland summer. And from there they went inland to Chiligo, where he secured his first job at the smelters. And that he was a stoker, and that's where he fed the coal into the furnace.
He wasn't involved in the sugarcane industry straight away.
No, he found it very difficult to actually secure permanent work in Australia. And there's no doubt that my grandparents did it tough after arriving from Malta in the early 1910s. Unlike compatriots who remained in the cities like Sydney and Melbourne, or who settled into a Maltese community in Mackay or Habana here in Queensland, my grandparents struck out on their own and they established a community deep within the bush at Bartelfria. And that meant they lived in a tent with an earthen floor for 9 years. and they followed the cane trail and just moved that tent wherever the work happened to be cutting cane. They would pack up the tent and move it to the next farm that had to have the cane harvested.
With the whole family, because as time went by, they had more kids in Australia.
That's right. So Grandma Pauline birthed three or four of the first children. She had no midwife. There was no hospital. She lived in the bush and she birthed the children on her own in a tent. So it wasn't very secure. And there was one marvellous story where she was sitting on a stool inside the tent breastfeeding the baby, and she heard a hissing sound, and before she realised, she stayed perfectly still, and a huge python came through one flap of the tent and went through her legs under the stool and went on its way out the other flap of the tent. Like, she had not seen a snake before.
This was a time and this was a place where you're saying they were very isolated.
Incredibly so. Incredibly so, because they did not... Granddad was illiterate. He never had an education in Malta, so he was fluent in Il Malti and Italian.
Mm.
But he spoke very little English and he had to learn very quickly to be accepted and to actually be given the opportunity to work. And Grandma, she was the one who had a convent education in Burkhara. So she was fluent also in Italian and Maltese, but she also had some education in English and French. So she understood.
Catherine Smith tibda biex tgħidilna li n-nannu tagħha Paul twieled b'Kirkara Malta fl-1888 u miet fi frar ta' l-1959 għalhekk ma tiftakrux ħaj. In-nanna Pauline mietet meta Catherine kellha 17-il sena. Tiftakar l-istejjer li kienu jirrakkuntaw it-tzijiet u l-kuġini tagħha, speċjalment fejn tidħol il-mużika u it-talent li it-tzijiet tagħha kellhom. Kienu jieħdu sehem f'kunċerti u attivitajiet kulturali madwar North Queensland. Paul Zammit wasal l-Australia fl-1912. Martu Pauline waslet kważi 18-il xahar wara f'Diċembru ta' l-1913 b'tarbija ta' twelid. Kien vjaġġ kuraġġuż għal Pauline li tivvjaġġa weħda fi vjaġġ li jieħu xahrejn. Ma kienx faċli tissettilja fi Queensland f'dak iż-żmien u kien xokk kbir għal Pauline li minn gżira żgħira issibruha f'North Queensland fl-qel tas-sajf. Paul ma kienx involut mill-ewwel fl-industrija tal-kannamieli x-sugar cane u kien diffiċli li jsib xogħol fiss fl-Awstralja. Kontrarju għal Maltin u Lawċin oħra li issettiljaw f'Melbourne u f'Sydney kmin fis-seklu 20 jew f'ambjent fejn kien hemm komunità Maltija f'Mackay jew ħabana fi Queensland, in-nanniet ta' Catherine Smith kienu weħidhom il-bogħod mill-bliet fejn stabbilew komunità f'Bart il-Frija. Kienu jgħixu f'kamp bl-art tat-trapp għal 9 snin u iġorru kollox minn post tal-ieħor fejn kien ikun hemm ix-xogħol tal-kannamili b'familja kbira ta' tfal żgħar. Staqsejt imbagħad kif beda x-xogħol fix-sugar cane.
He accepted part-time work because that's all they call it, piece work in the cane industry. Mm. There's a day here or a day there, but you're not permanently on the payroll for the whole season for harvesting. So he was very skilled at mimicking what the other cutters did and he became very good at cutting cane and very reliable and hardworking. So he started to build a name for himself as being a good worker, because it's back, cane cutting is very back-breaking work for very long hours of the day. And then his break came when he cut cane on a farm for a Danish emigrant called Peter Larsen. And Peter Larsen could see how genuine and hardworking this young Maltese couple happened to be. He was a similar age to Grandad, but he had a good command of English language and he was already established. Grandad worked on his farm, and when the cutting season ended, which is only the last 6 months of every year, he kept Grandad on the payroll, and that's how Grandad started to learn about how to manage a cane farm and what to do to own, to work towards owning his own farm. So this man was a great help to my grandparents.
It must have been difficult to save enough to buy a farm, I suppose.
Yes, it was. And my grandfather's youngest brother, Francesco, came to Australia, and they put their money together to buy the first 150 acres. And they worked clearing the land, the tall rainforest, the virgin rainforest. They cleared the rainforest from dawn till dark in a race to plant the first harvest. But he struggled before that because the cyclone of 1918 wiped them out, and they had to start all over again.
Clearing the land, that would have been a task on its own.
Absolutely. Very much so, because the virgin tall growth in the rainforest, the girth of some of these trees, was massive.
They start having good crops and, I suppose, saving a little bit of money, and that's how they even start helping other men. They had a few men working for them.
They had a lot of men working for them at the height of their success. So Grandad had the 150 acres, and then he paid Frank out because Frank wanted to go back to Malta. So Frank left for Malta. And that's when my grandfather took his first loan with the bank and bought another 150 acres to make 301 acres. And that 301 acres, to put it into perspective, was about six times the size of an average cane farm, was 50 acres.
And I suppose he built a house on it?
That's correct. And then as each child was born, he built another room. So it started as a small cottage, but ended up as a fairly sizable farmhouse.
What happened to this farm and to this house?
Yes, it was sold, and the farmhouse and the cane cutter's barracks, which was double story, which was pretty flash in those days. Most barracks were one level on the ground. But he had built a two-story barracks for his men, and so they slept upstairs, but they ate and showered and communed downstairs in the shade.
So who was cooking for them?
I don't know how Nanna did it, because it was slow combustion stove. Grandad grew all the vegetables, the fruit, and everything they grew. They were self-sufficient on the farm in food. And then Grandma would ask him to go and harvest what she needed for the day, and he would bring it to the kitchen, and she would start every meal for 10 children and up to 40 cane cutters every day. And that was breakfast, morning smoko, and then a hot lunch, and then afternoon smoko, dinner, and sometimes supper.
They basically lived off the land.
They did. The only thing they didn't have was meat, probably three dozen turkeys, because a turkey provided more meat than one chicken. So they had their own turkeys, and they had milking cows, And grandma made her own cheese and her bread and her biscuits and her desserts and everything but meat they had. So they swapped homemade wine and cheese with a family on the other side of the Russell River who swapped them fresh meat and cured meat.
Catherine Smith qalet li nannuha Paul Zamit kien jaċċetta kull xogħol fil-kannamili li jsib skont l-istaġun. Tgħallem jaqta x-sugar cane billi jara lill-oħrajn u beda jikseb isem bħala ħaddim li jistinka. Iltaqa' mbagħad ma' immigrant Daniż Peter Larsen li beda jaħdem fuq il-farm tiegħu. Dan żammu miegħu anke meta l-istaġun tal-tuħ tal-kannamili spiċċa. Ek Paul tgħallem kif jimmaniġġja farm ta' sugar cane u x'għandu jagħmel. Imbagħad minn Malta ġi ħu Paul Francesco. Flimkien huma xtraw l-ewwel 150 acre. Kien xogħol ta' tbatija u strapaż biex inatfu l-art li kienet foresta kbira. Sabuha diffiċli wara l-ewwel wiċċ ta' kannamili li inqeret miċ-ċiklun ta' l-1918 u kellhom jibdew mill-ġdid. Imbagħad bil-mod bdew jieħdu r-ruħ u ifadlu ftit tal-flus u jgħinu u iħadmu r-ġiel oħra fuq il-farm tagħhom. Fl-aqwa tiegħu Paul kellu mal-150 raġel jaħdmu miegħu. Meta ħu Paul reġalura l-Malta, Paul xtara is-sem tal-farm tiegħu. Kien f'dan iż-żmien li Paul issellef mill-bank biex xtara 150 acre oħra. Hemmhekk bnew id-dar. Paul kien jibni kamra kull meta kien ikollhom tarbija oħra. Fl-istess binja kien hemm ukoll il-kwartier fejn kienu joqogħdu il-ħaddiema. Kienu ikabru il-ħaxix tal-ikel huma stess u Pauline kienet issajjar għal l-10 tidfal. Huma l-40 ħaddim li kellhom jaħdmu magħhom. Kienu kważi jgħixu minn dak li kienu ikabru huma.